As some of you know, I retired 1 year ago after 25 years as a labor and delivery nurse. I continue to feel that the experience of laboring to give birth offers a powerful metaphor. Of course, there are many others. A metaphor for working with whatever is hard in our lives, from physical pain to loss and grieving, to living with uncertainty, to seeking a spiritual life. Of course, the most painful of hard things to deal with is loss. And as I talk about the experience of labor today, I'm aware that in this room are those who have given up on the dream of pregnancy or who have lost a baby or a child. And as I speak, I hold you in my heart. I'd like to talk for a moment about trust, the opposite of doubt. The development of what psychologist Eric Erickson describes as basic trust is complicated. Ideally, we all had perfect mothers, whatever that means. I suppose there is someone who did, and I heard it was Mr. Rogers. Probably more of us had what psychoanalyst Winnicott called good enough mothers. And then there are some of us who had a difficult beginning to our lives. Or perhaps certain life experiences have shaken whatever sense of basic trust we had. When we live with trust, we feel that the world is reliable and predictable and is by its very nature good, and that what happens is inevitably right. We are able to stay completely with what we are experiencing in the moment, feeling that the result will be what needs to happen and that we will do the best we can in the situation. This frees us to be fully present with energy to focus on what we need to do. But we remember again that basic trust is complicated by our beginnings and by what comes down the road as we grow and are engaged in our lives. When women choose to become pregnant, they usually imagine motherhood with a baby in their arms. What they don't think about is labor, how the baby gets there. Very few women choose not to become pregnant because they fear their ability to cope with labor. But then in early pregnancy, hormones shift, and it dawns on a woman that she is no longer in control. Initially, her body decides what it will digest and what should be rejected. She is often teary or angry about things that would not have fazed her before. As the baby grows, often to her distress, and despite her best efforts, her body expands, her feet swell, her face fills out. She may be thrilled about these changes, but either way, she has little control over what is unfolding. Toward the end of pregnancy, weird dreams can waken her in distress. Her baby is actually a bug, and she frantically searches for it behind the dresser. Or she has gone on vacation and left her baby at home to be cared for by the 10-year-old neighbor boy who agreed only to water her plants. Her body, emotions, and now her mind seem to be controlled by some other force. All of these are totally normal and predictable experiences pregnant women have. Still, even as they feel that someone or something else is actually in control of their bodies and their lives, they hang on to the illusion that they are in charge of their labor. They prepare by reading, practicing breathing patterns, listening to the childbirth experiences of their friends, sharing their hopes and fears with their partner. And then the moment arrives when they can no longer walk, talk, or laugh through a contraction. There is plenty of reason to doubt the process of labor. Think of it. How can a baby actually fit through that small opening? And as contractions strengthen, how does one actually survive the intensity over and over for hours? This is what I have seen again and again. As powerful as the experience is of moving through labor, whether she chooses an epidural or not, most of the time, a woman gets on the train and goes for the ride, trusting that she will eventually hold a baby in her arms. Trust overrides doubt in labor, even as the train gathers speed and shudders down the track, even as she barely keeps her balance walking down the aisle, even as she holds on to the conductor's vertical bar suspended outside the train, hanging on for dear life. She muddles through, her emotions and coping efforts flickering back and forth between doubt and trust, but with an overall sense of trust. My job as her nurse was to help her reconnect with trust that her body knew how to do this, even if she didn't, that pain would not overwhelm her, that she would not fall apart, that she could work with pain by using inner resources she never knew she had. My job was to remind her that she could trust and to help her aim for it, find it, and use it. A woman who understands that laboring to give birth is a process through which she will move, a process with a beginning, a middle, and an end, is able to be more fully present in the moments of her labor. She trusts that just as she moves from early labor into active labor, she will also move from labor to delivery and soon hold a baby in her arms. She is fully engaged with contractions and also the replenishing time in between. A contraction is a wave that washes over and then is done for a while. When a woman feels connected in love and trust to her partner, extended family and friends, and the women of the world who have already given birth, she can access the trust that pain will end when the contraction has done its important work. In between contractions, a woman who remains in the moment can fully replenish. A good deep breath, a letting go of the tension in her body, a sip of juice, an awareness of the love that surrounds her. In this way, she is ready to meet the next contraction with confidence and trust. She's not focused on what is down the road, but on this moment. She may doubt everything when the next contraction starts up again, but she will be able to pull herself back onto the train when she is able. She directs her energy toward the moment she is simply and profoundly in. And so contraction by contraction, centimeter by centimeter, a woman moves through labor, wavering between doubt and trust, living fully with doubt and trust, right into motherhood. All of this reminds me of Rainer Maria Rilke's response to the young poet who wanted more certainty in his life, to have all the answers to life's mysteries. I would like to beg you, dear sir, as well as I can, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now because you would not be able to live into them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday, far into the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer.